Ream, distract her. Her only guess was to go farther in, so she picked up a large vase with a fragrant bouquet, holding it carefully in front of herself as though she had a purpose. Carrying a bunch of flowers around seemed like a rational occupation in this gilded birdcage. After passing several closed doors and turning down three separate hallways, Lada was hit with a wave of despair. Mahmed would probably finish with his business here and leave before she ever found him, and then what would she tell her men? The sound of a baby crying tugged at her ears. She swerved, following the shrill donkey-like braying, until she came to a room with its carved wooden doors thrown open. She slipped inside and immediately moved to the left, where a delicately painted screen stood in front of a large open window. She managed to slide between the screen and the wall, the sound of her movements masked by the screaming infant. Mahmed's laugh rang through the room, falling on Lada's shoulders like a blow. "Am I holding him wrong? He does not like me."
"Of course he likes you."
The woman's voice was sticky sweet. Lada could feel it settling in her ears and knew that no amount of scrubbing would rid her of its residue.
"He is strong. See?"
"My little Bayezid. Be strong while I am gone. I will be back soon." Mahmed's words effused tenderness, and Lada wished for any other scenario. She had thought the worst that would happen would be finding him with another woman. But this... she did not know how to be angry over this. But still, she managed.
"How long will you be gone?" the woman asked.
"However long it takes to defeat Skanderberg. Will you need anything?"
"No, no. We are very well taken care of. Be safe."
"Goodbye, my boy." Lada noted with some mean satisfaction that Mahmed's tone speaking to his concubine was the same he used when addressing any servant. But he clearly felt something for the child, and the concubine had given him that. The baby's cries left the room. Lada heard someone stand. She stepped out from behind the screen, still holding the vase. Mahmed barely glanced at her as he walked straight for the doorway. She threw the vase to the right of his head. He ducked as it shattered against the wall, water and flowers scattered among the sharp shards of glazed pottery. He looked at her, face red with fury. "What in the name of..." She ripped off her veil. For a moment his anger stayed frozen in place, then dissolved into a smile. He laughed, shaking his head. "What are you doing here, Lada?" She closed the door. Hope lit his eyes, and he moved forward. She twisted out of his reach.
"I could have killed you."
"By all means, kill me." His smile was anything but concerned as he reached for her. It had been days since they had stolen a private moment. Not here, she thought. Anywhere but here.
"Skanderberg?"
she asked, changing the direction of their interaction. Iskander Bey had been one of Murad's favorite Yanicheris, and now he was one of Lada's favorites. He had been a thorn in the Empire's side for years, using what he had learned from them to keep them at bay. Lada had studied every account of his fights with the same devotion Mahmed gave to Islam. Mahmed's expression closed off. "Yes, my father has declared a new campaign. I will ride with him and command a flank in the siege." Lada's chest welled with excitement. She could prove herself, her men, and... she could go. Finally, see somewhere else, even if it was not home.
"When do we leave?"
Mahmed did not meet her eyes. He leaned down and picked up several of the flowers, carefully avoiding the sharp edges of the broken vase.
"I leave this afternoon."
Lada hurried to the door.
"We can be ready within the hour. I..."
Mahmed grabbed her arm, pulling her back.
"You are not coming."
"I..." "What?" "We are ready. My men are ready. My force is small in number, but we can scout, and I will..."
"You are staying here."
Lada peeled off his hand and took a step back.
"Why?"
He was suddenly fascinated by the bruised flowers in his hand.
"I need to leave someone I trust in charge of the city.
Anyone can do that. Nothing of value will be left here.
Mahmed's gaze was heavy when it finally found her.
Nothing of value.
Understanding hit Lada. She ripped the flowers from his hand and threw them to the ground.
I will not stay behind to watch your brat. I am no nursemaid.
Mahmed blinked rapidly and shook his head.
Lada, I was not talking about my son. Do you think he is the only thing here I value?
Then what?
You. I will not take you into battle. You have no idea what the conditions are like, no idea how many ways there are to die.
I can handle myself.
But what about me? What would I do if something happened to you? I have to keep you safe.
She pushed his chest, sending him stumbling, vase shards crunching beneath his boots.
I am not something to be kept. Next, you will tell me you want to keep me behind walls, keep me in padded, perfumed rooms, keep me here.
I am not your concubine, Mahmed. That is not what I am asking.
He threw his hands up, pacing in a circle.
You are precious to me. What is so wrong with wanting to take care of you?
If I needed or wanted to be taken care of, I would be no better than the women in here.
I am nothing like them. No, you are not. I love you, Lada.
He closed his eyes and lowered his voice, trying to regain control.
Please allow me to love you. You are the most important person in my life. You and your brother are the only people who truly know me.
Lada flinched, and Mahmed's eyebrows raised as he noticed her reaction. He did not understand why, though. Lada had not told him about her last fight with Radu, nor that she had heard nothing from him since they parted. Mahmed remained blind to the true depths of Radu's love and to how much Lada missed her brother.
Please, Mahmed said. I have already lost Radu to my father. He rarely writes, and when he does, it is as though he addresses a stranger. I cannot afford to lose you, too.
You cannot lose something you do not own. Take me with you.
With a frustrated growl, he tore the veil from her hair and threw it to the ground.
You look ridiculous. Armor suits you far more than silk.
Lada put a hand to his cheek. His skin was soft and hot, always hot, as though he burned brighter than a normal person. Her voice came out a low purr, so like Huma's, she startled herself.
Take me with you, and I will wear armor the whole time.
She pulled his face down, kissing him, letting the fire he burned with ignite something inside her. He grabbed her waist, pressing against her, matching her fierceness. She pushed her hip against his groin, where she could feel a hardness already formed. It terrified her, and also thrilled her that she had the power to make that happen. He groaned into her mouth, the kiss becoming deeper and more frantic.
Lada, he said, kissing her throat, her ear, her hair. Lada, Lada.
Take me with you, she whispered in his ear.
He buried his face in her hair, arms holding her so tightly she knew she had won. Then he shook his head.
No.
With a scream, she pushed him away. He fell, his shoes soaked from the vase's water. She pulled out a dagger, leaned down and cut off his sash. Crumpling the silk in her fist, she stared down at him.
You need me safe. Who will keep you safe?
I have killed you again under your guards. Very noses.
He had the audacity to lie back on the floor and laugh.
Lada, no one in the world would ever be as devoted or ingenious in the pursuit of killing me as you are time and again.
He held out his arms, black eyes imploring.
Come, spend these few hours with me. I miss you.
She leaned forward, just out of his reach.
You should become accustomed to that sensation.
The way out was easier than the way in, the opposite of how a harem usually functioned for the women who crossed the threshold. As she left, she passed a startled Ilyas. She threw Mahmed's sash at his feet,
We killed him again. You lose. Try to bring him back alive from Albania.
Her own cruel words to Mahmed stung her as she nodded to a waiting Stefan, indicating their latest game had been a success. If Mahmed died, they would have parted with him declaring his love, and her answering with cruelty. He would never know how she felt, that he tormented her, that he was a bright star in the black nighttime of her life. It would be exactly what he deserved, to die without knowing, because he left her behind. And she would never forgive herself. 38. 1451. Cruj, Albania. Radu supposed that, with his new armor and weaponry, plus a personal servant, a tent, supplies, and a gorgeous horse, he was wealthier than he had ever been after years of owning nothing. He simply would have preferred this newfound prosperity to be the result of something other than marching to war at Murad's side. He knew, too, that somewhere among the tens of thousands of men around him, Mahmed moved toward the same goal. Remaining in Adana would have been lonely with the pashas, pashazadas, Yanacheris, and various friends he had made all gone for the siege of Skanderberg's Albanian holdings. He would have had far too much time to think when denied his daily scheming, spying and socializing. He would have thought of nothing but Mahmed. This was not a preferable scenario. He found himself scanning the endless sea of faces constantly, wondering, yearning, hoping for simply a glimpse of his friend. But Murad's and Mahmed's forces were on different ends of the procession, separating Radu and Mahmed by a full day's march. The sheer logistics of moving this many men and this much equipment was staggering. Supply wagons and trains of animals trailed the soldiers, as did several hundred women who traveled with the men and offered various services. Murad had looked pleased when Radu blanched at an offer to take advantage of the women.
"You are truly a devout son of God."
Radu had not known whether to laugh or cry over this praise. 3 days from their target city, Cruj, Radu had ridden ahead with Azar and the scouts under his command. The rolling, soft green landscape had begun to show signs of civilization. Radu pulled his horse to a stop, patting her long black neck while he waited for Lazar to catch up.
"What happened here? Is this where they fought before?"
Radu looked out across vast, undulating farmland, charred beyond use. Lazar shook his head.
"God's wounds. Skanderberg's welcoming gift. We will find no supplies from here to the city."
"He burned his own land." Radu could scarcely take in the enormity of the destroyed crops. It was prime growing season, meaning Skanderberg would have had to destroy an entire season's worth of crops, leaving his people with nothing come harvest time.
"Probably poisoned the wells and ponds for good measure."
"But what about his people? What will they do when the siege is over?" Lazar shrugged.
"Not our concern."
He rode back toward the main body of the soldiers to report on their findings. Radu guided his horse forward at a slow walk, taking in the ravaged countryside. It would certainly make their work more difficult. They had accounted for taking livestock and supplies to supplement their stores. This would make things tighter and more difficult, splintering their men to guard the now crucial supply trains. It also raised the cost of the siege to even more astronomical heights. But it was the image of a stone foundation, charred wood walls drawing the crude blackened outlines of what had once been a home, that stayed with Radu for the remainder of his travels. Their forces would not have burned civilians' homes down, and after they took the city, they would have allowed everyone in Skanderberg's domain to continue to live as they had before. To worship as they had before, giving them security and prosperity. Radu wondered how much Skanderberg was willing to sacrifice and destroy in the name of protecting his people. By the time they reached the walls of Cruj,
Radu was already saddle and soul weary. Setting up and organizing camp took nearly a week. They were within sight of the city, but out of cannon's reach. Radu's men pitched tent on the outer circle of Murad's vast pavilion, which was tucked into the center of the camp, buffered by tens of thousands of people around it. The Ottomans now had a larger population than any city within several days' march, including Cluj. Radu commanded a frontier force. Their role was to harass and harry lines, not set up for siege. He helped direct where he could, stayed out of the way where he could not, and watched with a mixture of pride and dread as their superior force settled in to besiege the traitor, Scantabug. And, five times a day, Radu set out his mat and prayed, sending extra hope toward God that the siege would be over quickly. Radu walked the perimeters of the camp. It had been 3 weeks since they arrived, with little to show for it. They had sent scouting parties to find the city's water source and cut it off, to no avail. They had tried to bribe the commander of the city and been rebuffed. The walls loomed, constant and mocking. "It is a siege," the Tsar would say, shrugging his shoulders. "The game is waiting." Radu did not care for the game. His men had been used lightly so far, only escorting one supply train and doing guard duty 2 nights every 7. He had been frightened to be part of a siege, but now he was bored. All the waiting was liable to make a man mad. He sighed, walking far enough from the camp that the fires did not impede his ability to see in the dark. He could have stayed in his tent, but if his men were out here, he would be too. It was only fair. Nearby, Yazid, a young Yanacheri, whispered as he walked. "What hangs at a man's thigh and wants to poke the hole that it has often poked before?" Someone groaned in annoyance. Lazar hissed for Yazid to shut up. Radu blushed, grateful for being unseen. He already had a reputation for being too delicate about these matters, and wondered what the men said behind his back. An odd clicking noise drew his attention. He squinted through the darkness. "Get down!" Lazar slammed into him, bearing him to the ground. Something passed over them, more the rumor of a sound than anything. Radu crawled out from under Lazar, dazed and in shock. If it had not been for Lazar, he would be dead. His impulse, strongest and first, was to run. He was not made for this. If Lada were here, she would have... No, he was in charge. He would lead his men. "To me," he shouted. "Crossbows! Shields up! Form a line!" He held his shield in front of him, tense and cringing as he waited for a bolt to claim him. Lazar stood next to him, his shield pressed to Radu's. With a speed that made him proud, Radu's men joined them. As one, they moved forward, steady and sure, toward where their unseen assailants still fired at them. They met no one. Scanderbird's men had already disappeared into the darkness, whatever purpose they had been after thwarted. Radu's forces warily broke their line, ears and eyes on high alert. "A key," Yazid muttered as he broke a crossbow bolt off from where it had lodged in his shield. "The answer was a key, though I suppose a bolt would have been a good line too." Lazar stayed next to Radu, but he drew no comfort. Everyone else seemed so calm, resigned to the familiar reality of battle. Radu was cold from the sweat that had instantly drenched him, his racing heart still frantic. He had always known they would be attacked, but it had been theoretical. He had not known it, as he did now. He walked, newly aware of every part of his body as though he were naked. He felt himself once again too small, too weak, like the boy terrified of Mircea's unpredictable bursts of violence. Only now he had no castle to hide in, no curtains to stand behind, and he was responsible for so many more lives than his own.
39. 3 months after the rest of the Yanacheris left, Larda's men finally had something to look forward to. They were expecting a shipment of gunpowder. Normally, they would have had nothing to do with it, but with all the other Yanacheris on the siege at Kruj, it was up to them to decide how to use it. The responsible decision would be to put it in storage and wait for the return of Ilias. He would, no doubt, have specific people in mind to train on gunpowder uses and strategies. But Ilias was not here. And with Radu far away, excelling at politics, and not a single letter from Mahmed, Larda wanted to burn things. She was waiting at the gate to the keep when the wagon rolled to a stop in front of her. A woman climbed down, brows hunched low and matching her posture.
"Where is the commander?"
"I am the commander." Though her back would never straighten again, the woman's eyebrows did.
"You?"
Her gaze took in Larda's uniform, but it lingered like a question on Larda's chest. Larda resisted the urge to fold her arms over her breasts.
"Yes. You are not what I expected."
With a shrug, Larda said, "I could say the same." The woman smiled, revealing several missing teeth.
"We are at war. Again. My husband and sons are always called up by our spy-he leader to serve. We have unique skills."
"We?
I know as much about gunpowder as any man."
"And yet you are left behind," Larda scowled, moving forward to look at the barrels in the wagon. "Does that make you angry?"
"Of course it makes me angry. It leaves me to do the work of my husband and our three sons all by myself."
"No, I mean, you have as much place fighting as they do. They should not leave you behind like you are worthless."
"Pah! We shoulder a burden for the Empire, just as the men do. Who else could keep everything running while soldiers tromp about having pissing contests?"
Larda laughed in spite of herself.
"You would not say that in front of me if I were a man. I transport gunpowder and teach fools how to avoid killing themselves with it. I say whatever I want, in front of whomever I want."
Nikolai tripped up to them, nearly dancing in his excitement.
"What should we blow up first?"
His eyes were bright enough to light gunpowder without a flame. The woman sighed.
"My name is Tohin. Might as well begin introductions, because it looks like I will be spending more time than normal keeping your fools from killing themselves.
Tohin, I am glad to have you." Larda was surprised to feel how sincerely she meant it. Tohin reminded Larda of her nurse. If Larda's nurse had had fingertips burned to thick calluses and had been expert in the use of gunpowder for combat. There was a quality there, a directness bordering on blunt hostility, that brought to mind the way her nurse would mutter to herself when she thought no one could hear. There was also a gleam of approval in Tohin's eyes as she watched Larda command her men that made Larda think of sitting by the fireplace, having her hair brushed. If only this woman came with a Bogdan, too. Or a Radu. After several days training with tiny amounts of gunpowder, how to pack it, how to set a fuse so that there was time to get away before it blew, how to care for it, Larda's men were ready for a real lesson. They hiked up the side of the mountain and down into a narrow canyon, away from any homesteads. Each man carried a portion of gunpowder, and they took turns lugging a tremendously heavy small cannon. It was work slicked with sweat and punctuated with cursing. Larda imagined she was climbing to Mahmed's side to fight next to him, and then she imagined she would be aiming the cannon at his heart instead. She did not know which scenario made her feel better. Finally, at their destination, they set down the cannon.
"I like crossbows more," Petru said, sulking as he massaged his hands.
Tohin slapped the back of his head.
"Think bigger, little idiot."
The scenario was simple. An army would be coming at them through the canyon. They had to fire as many rounds of cannon shot as they could to disrupt the imaginary soldiers. Larda knew the impact of the cannon would be more psychological than anything. Artillery light enough to be easily transported would not do much more damage than Petru's beloved crossbow. But the noise and newness of the cannon could be used as an intimidation tactic to break lines and trigger a retreat. Still, it was an awful lot of work for relatively little reward. She stood back as Matei and Stefan adjusted the angle of the cannon with Tohin's guidance. The walls of the canyon were narrow and steep, with minimal cover. If an army was coming down it, there would be nowhere for them to go but forward, into them, or back, only to try again. Larda looked along the top of the canyon on either side, noting the heavy rocks jutting out. What if there was nowhere to go at all? Stop, Larda said. I can take out an entire army with two explosions. Tohin let out an exasperated breath. You soldiers always overestimate the damage. There is not enough gunpowder, and you would be killed if you stayed close enough to light it under an approaching army. Not under. The sun dazzled Larda's eyes as it shone down on her through a break in the rocks above. Over. Tohin and Larda sat together on the jumble of rocks that had come down, blocking the entire bottom of the canyon. In an actual battle, it would have been much more difficult. The timing would have to be perfect. They would need to wait long enough for the opposing army to be fully into the canyon. Stealth would be paramount. A single shot taking out either of the soldiers who were left to light the charges would ruin the whole thing. But it had worked. Using the gunpowder to trigger an avalanche on two ends of the valley blocked the way forward and the way back. With steep sides and no cover, a force as scant as Larda's could have killed hundreds of trapped men, picking them off, one by one. You have a very good mind, Tohin said. The rest of Larda's Yanacheris were already starting the long, back-breaking process of lugging the cannon they had never bothered using over the mountain and to the fortress on the other side. The conditions would have to be specific for that to be effective. Still, using the land around yourself as a weapon, that does not occur to most people. You heard that little idiot, the one with a head thicker than his rock. All he could think of was a weapon he could hold in his hand. And yet, for all my brilliance, I am fighting imaginary foes in a canyon behind a fortress no one would ever try to storm. Would you rather be on the field at Cruge, throwing men at a wall that does not budge, watching them die of rotting sickness? Larda felt a twinge of panic. They had had almost no word from the siege. She assumed that meant things were going well. There is sickness? A camp that large? There is always sickness. Have you heard from them? Tohin nodded. My husband and one of my sons have written. There has been no progress, and disease is ravaging camp much faster than they expected it to. What about? Larda stopped herself. She could not stop picturing Mahmed lying on a cot, wasting away and sinking into himself. All this time she had imagined him with a sword in his hand, commanding men, accomplishing great things, and never once wanting or needing her by his side. But disease was not a foe she had anticipated. Larda cleared her throat, trying to ease the tightness that had taken root there. What other news? Nothing. They will push at the wall until it breaks or winter comes, and then they will return home. Whether they win or lose, the result is the same. The men come home, and I have less work to do, but more mouths to feed. Why do they bother? What difference does Cruge make? Does it really hold so much value for the Empire that it is worth this risk? Larda stood, pacing. She let the fear she felt for Mahmed act as a fuse to light her anger. Damnable fools. It is not about Cruge, Tohin said. Of course not. It is about Murad's pride. He cannot stand that his protege betrayed him, and so he risks Mahmed. Larda paused, taking a deep breath. He risks thousands of men to take revenge against one. It is not about Skanderberg either. Tohin raised a hand, cutting off the argument brimming on Larda's tongue. Yes, he
He wants to make an example of Skanderberg, punish him. But what do you think would happen in the other border cities if Murad did not address this? They would return to their rightful rulers. He overreaches. He has no business there. And what if he allowed Cruj to leave? If he allowed all the vassal states their freedom? If he withdrew to the borders of the Ottoman Empire, as they were before we began eating into Europe? What then? I do not understand the question. Where would it stop? Should we leave all the cities, go back to the deserts in the east, roam on horses? Of course not. So we stay here. You would allow us the first territories of our conquest. How generous of you. Do you think Hunyadi would be satisfied? Do you think Byzantium would thank us and happily live on their sliver of land? Do you think the Pope would stop calling for crusades? I do not think when do borders ever stay as they are. Our own people were driven from the east, fleeing from destruction. They saw cities and walls, and they wanted that. So they took them. If they had not taken them, they would have died, and someone else would have come and taken the cities instead. So defend what is yours. Why must it turn to conquest? Cruj is ours. Skanderberg is ours. If we were not pushing, fighting, claiming what is ours and challenging what is not yet ours, others would be doing it to us. It is the way of the world. You can be the aggressor. You can fight against crusaders on their own land, or you can stay at home and wait for them to come to you. And they would come. They would come with fire, with disease, with swords and blood and death. Weakness is an irresistible lure. Lada remembered Hunyadi riding into her father's capital as though he owned it. Her father was weak, and because he was weak, because he tried only to maintain what he had and avoid a fight, Valahia suffered. Tohin continued. Murad takes war to other countries so that here, in the empire, we can carry on with the business of living. We expand, because if we did not, we would die. It is Murad's responsibility to see that we live. Lada stared at the ruined canyon. The price of living seems to always be death. Tohin stood, joints popping audibly. And that is why you become a dealer of death. You feed death as many people as you can, to keep it full and content so its eye stays off you. A dealer of death. Lada carried the phrase back to the fortress on her tongue, rolling it around. Borders and aggression, sieges and sickness, dealers of death. She prayed that Mahmed would not be one of those fed to death to keep it away from the heart of the Ottoman Empire. 40. No one was more surprised to see the shaft of an arrow appear in the middle of Yazid's torso than he was. He looked up at Radu, a half-smile on his face as though the arrow were the end of the joke he had been in the middle of telling. And then he fell off his horse, tangling under the wheels of the supply wagon behind them. "Ambush!" Lazar shouted. Radu should have shouted that, but he kept looking at the space on the back of the horse where Yazid had just been. Now there was nothing. An arrow flew by so close to his face that he felt the sting of its wind. Two more came in quick succession, though these were flaming and not meant for him. They found their larger target in the wood and canvas of the wagon. Shouts up and down the 20-wagon train sounded, letting Radu know the whole thing was under attack. The trees were close, pressing in like giant fingers, ready to pull them all into the depths of the forest, to smother them in murky green and muffled birdsong, until everything was quiet again. There was a lot of screaming. Water drenched Radu. Someone had thrown a bucket at the wagon and soaked Radu more than the wood. A flash of movement in the trees caught Radu's attention, and he threw himself from his horse, shouting as he drew his sword and ran for the enemy. There was an arm, A scream, a flash of an eye showing white all around the iris, and then there was a body at his feet, his sword red with a terrible knowledge. Radu threw his head back in a howl of triumph. All he saw among the trees were men running, away from him, away from the wagon train. They had won. He had won. No one had been there to protect him, not this time, and he looked down. The enemy, the terrible threat that he had single-handedly ended, was a boy. His wrists were knobby, his elbows sharp points, his eyes wide and wondering with death, where orbs in a gaunt face had told of hunger and desperation, and so very, very few years. Radu dropped to his knees and reached out. His hand hovered over the hole he had made that tore this boy from life. He had shot arrows at enemies before, had probably killed before, but never like this. Never with a face right there to fall still and cold with the question of why. Radu. A hand came down on his shoulder. Radu, are you hurt? Radu twitched away with a shudder. I will scout ahead. He stumbled back to his horse, galloping beyond the train, beyond the line, beyond the last scouts kneeling on the ground around one of their dead. When he had left them all behind, he gasped for air, but could not find it. For the first time ever, his life had been in danger, and no one had been there to save him. He had saved himself. But no one had saved that boy in the forest, and Radu cried for him, wishing that someone had. Radu threw down his maps, rubbing his face wearily. We could burn down the trees. Which trees? Lazar leaned back, stretching his long legs and smiling with lazy amusement. He spent more time in Radu's tent than his own, as the siege dragged interminably and the lines between ranks broke down. 5 months they had been here. 5 months. All of them. All the trees from here to Italy. All the trees everywhere. Any tree that could hide Scanterberg and his damnable men along any route our supply trains travel. Did you hear? The Venetians have announced they will no longer sell us supplies. Radu sighed, the thick pole in the middle of his tent supporting his weight as he leaned against it. Well, that solves the problem of how to guard the wagons at the very least. If we have no supplies, Scanterberg's men cannot attack and steal them. Winter is nearly here. We will freeze before we starve, if that is any comfort. Radu stood. You are late to visit the women of the camp. Lazar spent much of his free time with the prostitutes that accompanied the soldiers. At first Radu had pretended not to notice, but now, as with everything else, he no longer cared. I like to make them miss me sometimes too. I am generous with my love. I have enough for everyone. He climbed onto Radu's cot, lying back with a look that pretended at innocence. He was getting bolder, deliberately teasing when they were alone, and Radu did not know how to handle it. He cared about Lazar, valued his friendship and counsel, but he was in no mood to try to answer the question. Rather than facing Lazar, he walked out into the night. Smoke hung heavy on the air. Radu breathed it in, made it a part of himself. He was certain the smoke had lodged permanently in his nose, and he would never be able to smell anything else. The careful rose they had laid out 5 months ago had decayed into a rambling warren of tents, muddy quagmires and trash heaps. Radu avoided the worst parts, skirting campfires where men gathered, eyes permanently narrowed and fists clenched. Kumal's tent grew from the midst of the camp, like a diseased mushroom. Radu ducked inside, nodding at the grim-faced servants. The air was too close, a subtle, sour odor of sickness inescapable. He could, it turned out, smell something other than smoke. He made his way quietly to Kumal's cot, then sat on the rug next to it. Kumal's face was sunken, his eyelids pulled so thin over his eyes that Radu could see each delicate vein beneath the skin. Too many in the camp were sick, with disease running rampant after so long in such close quarters,
At least Kumal had the dignity of dying in privacy.
Kumal raised a hot, dry hand, and Radu took it in his own.
How are you today, my friend?
Kumal's lips cracked as he parted them in a smile.
I am... well, he rasped.
Radu answered the smile as well as he could manage.
Do you need anything? Water?
Kumal shook his head.
I need... a promise.
Radu clucked his tongue.
I am sorry. The supply wagon carrying promises was waylaid by Skanderberg last week. We are entirely out of them.
Kumal's chest rattled with a laugh.
I am serious. I need a promise. From you. Anything. Take care of Nazira.
Radu blinked and looked up at the draping cloth of the tent ceiling, now stained black with smoke, soiled and ruined like everything else here.
She will be very upset with you when we return and she finds out you were trying to get rid of her.
Kumal's grip tightened with more strength than Radu thought he had left.
I promise, Radu said. I will take care of her.
Kumal sighed in relief, his body deflating under the blanket until it looked as though a grown man could not possibly be beneath it. Radu stayed with him for another hour, but they did not speak again. When Radu left, he wondered, lost in thought. He drew closer and closer to the edge of camp. He stood outside the last straggling tents, staring toward the dark line of the wall, that damnable wall. 3 times they had directly assaulted it, only to be repulsed. They had never managed to find the water source for the city. They had even tried to bribe the city leaders again, to no avail. There was a loud rumbling sound, and the ground beneath his feet shuddered. A plume of dust rose against the sky, blotting out the stars. Men shouted, but there was none of the typical clash of metal and scream of horses that signaled a surprise attack from a raiding force. This was something new, something bad. Radu ran forward, drawing his sword. He stumbled in the dark, raising an arm to his mouth to avoid inhaling the dirt that drifted in the air like the grave coming to collect them all. On his left, another man joined him.
No, no, no!
The man screamed. Radu tripped and fell hard to the cold ground, nearly impaling himself on his sword. Because he knew that voice, and he knew the hand that reached out to pull him up.
Come on, we have to help. The tunnel's collapsed.
In the dark, Mahmed did not know him. But Radu would know him anywhere. He took the hand, held it as though it were his anchor to this world, and then it was gone. And Mahmed disappeared into the night ahead of him. Radu hesitated. If he went back to camp now, Mahmed would never know. They would not speak. Radu could slip back into the blood-tinged monotony of his days, but that was a lie, because even when Mahmed was not in his life, he was the missing son at the center of everything. Radu still revolved around Mahmed, even when he was gone. Radu ran forward, catching up to Mahmed, who had stopped on the edge of a sunken line in the ground. It led from where they stood to within a few arm spans of the wall. Mahmed dropped to his knees, hanging his head in despair. A couple of men moved up and down the line, calling frantically. But it was obvious that anyone who had been inside the tunnel would not be coming out. Radu knelt beside Mahmed, putting a hand on his shoulder. Mahmed looked up in surprise. But whatever he was about to say died on his lips as he squinted at Radu. Without a word, he threw himself forward. He wrapped his arms around Radu's torso and buried his face in his shoulder. The earth shifted again beneath Radu, or inside Radu, the rumbling and collapsing groan of all his promises to himself falling away. Mahmed. His Mahmed. He put a hand to the back of Mahmed's neck, holding him.
I failed, Mahmed said. They are all dead. And I failed.
Radu shook his head, cheek brushing the top of Mahmed's head.
We have all failed. This is not your fault. This was my plan, though. My idea to save the siege.
No one can save it. Do not hold yourself responsible for your father's folly. Learn from it.
Mahmer nodded into his shoulder, then pulled back. He grasped Radu's shoulders too tightly, as though he was afraid Radu might drift away.
How could he?
Mahmed was his son. He would always return.
How are you here?
I came with your father. I have been here the whole time. Shock and hurt played across Mahmed's face. He did not look well, drawn and pale even in the darkness. Either he had been sick or he was getting sick. Radu wanted to run his fingers down Mahmed's cheeks, to touch him, to fix him.
Why have you not found me before?
Mahmed asked. Because I am in love with you. Because I cannot be around you for fear you will finally see what is written across my heart. Because the pain of you is one I cannot bear.
I could not without betraying my true purposes to your father's inner circle.
They must think I am indifferent to you.
I do not understand.
I am spying for you, Mahmed. Learning how everything in the city works, tracing the lines of bribes, corruption, conspiracy, so that when you take the throne again, I can give you what you did not have before.
Allies, information, plans.
Mahmed dropped his hands.
This is why you left.
Radu nodded, shivering against the bitter cold left in the absence of Mahmed's touch.
You left to help me. Not because you hate me.
Radu's voice trembled with how much he wanted Mahmed to hear, to understand in the next sentence.
I could never hate you.
Mahmed drew him close, pressing their foreheads together. Mahmed's was feverishly hot.
You broke my heart for missing you, Radu.
Eyes closed. Radu drew a shaking breath.
Mine too. You are my best, my truest friend. Will you return with me? Come home.
Radu nearly said yes, could not have said no, when Mahmed continued.
Lada needs you too.
Radu dropped his head, pressing it harder against Mahmed's, then straightened, pulling away.
How is my sister?
She breathes fire and pisses vinegar.
So, the same.
Mahmed laughed darkly.
The same. I fear she will never forgive me for leaving her behind. But this is no place for a woman. Lada is no woman. Be that as it may, I could not bring her into so much danger. But you, I could have had you by my side this whole time.
Radu sat back onto his heels, putting more distance between them. He did not know whether to rejoice that Mahmed would have brought him over Lada, or to despair that Lada was too precious to risk, while Radu would have been welcomed. Everything that Radu had been through, all the things he had done while here, he could never go back to what he was before. He had lost too much. But Mahmed could not see that.
I have to stay with your father.
Radu stood, his knees nearly betraying him by sending him back down to the ground, to Mahmed. He locked them in place, standing as tall and straight as the impregnable city behind them. Otherwise he would be unable to repair the vicious rubble this night had made of the walls around his heart.
Otherwise, all my work will be for naught. And I intend to be the more useful Dragula for you.
He forced a smile and a light tone.
Lada is already 2 assassination attempts ahead of me. I have some catching up to do.
Mahmed stood.
You say you have to do these things. But what do you want to do?
Radu stretched his fingers, reaching toward Mahmed, touching just the hem of his tunic. Behind Mahmed, he saw a group of Yanacheris running toward them. Radu smiled his best, most innocent smile. The smile without guile. The smile that said, tell me your secrets, no harm will come. The smile that said, there is nothing more to me than what you see. Trust me. Trust me.
What I want does not matter. What matters is preparing the way for you to be the Sultan we both know you can be. You will be the hand of God on earth, and I will do whatever I can to see that come to pass.
Radu walked back to camp alone, wondering if maybe he did understand Skanderbeg after all, because there was nothing he would not sacrifice for Mehmed, including himself.
Nazar stood alarmed when Radu entered the tent. Radu had not expected to see him again tonight.
What happened? You look as though you have seen the devil.
Radu shook his head as he sat, wishing Lazar were not here so he could think about Mehmed and indulge this exquisite pain in private.
Not the devil.
Mehmed. Lazar smiled bitterly. I see little difference.
How was he?
He looked ill. The siege has not been kind to him.
As it should be.
When Radu curled up and turned away, Lazar put a hand gently on his shoulder. It did not burn as Mahmed's did not sear where it touched.
You still feel the same for him?
I always will.
And your sister?
Radu flinched, remembering Mahmed's careful protection of Lada, and regretting having confessed to Lazar that Mehmed and Lada had something between them that he craved.
Please, Lazar, stop speaking.
Lazar's hand moved, and Radu heard him rummaging through items in Radu's chest nearest his small writing desk.
I am writing up the reports for you. It will be a while. Do you mind?
Radu grunted and waved. He wanted to be alone, but he did not want to have to write the reports himself.
Lazar often did it for him, collecting the information. All he needed was Radu's signature. After several minutes, Lazar knelt in front of Radu, holding a sheaf of papers so that only the bottom, where Radu needed to sign, showed. Radu signed them all without hesitation. And then, finally, Lazar left. Radu buried his face in his blanket, heart beating to the sorrow and joy of Mehmed.
Mehmed. Mehmed.
41.
What I would not give for a roving band of Huns right now, Nikolai sighed, lying flat on his back in the middle of the training ring.
The dirt beneath him was packed hard by decades of feet. The low wooden walls of the ring were lined with pegs that held the equipment of the men who practiced there. Like all days the last 6 months, the pegs were empty. Tohin had left shortly after they destroyed the canyon. She had other outposts to visit, other soldiers to teach. Lada missed her, and she especially missed creating explosions. They could not keep training with gunpowder, because there simply was not enough of it. There was so little to do. Today, Petru and Matei were on patrol with Stefan. Lada did not know where her other troops were, and found it nearly impossible to care. They were relegated to minor local duties, to compensate for the lack of Spahis and Vali governors. Last week they had investigated the theft of several pigs from a local farm. The thief, caught in the act, was a hole in the fence and a patch of truffles in the forest. Even her hatred of Mehmed for leaving her had lost its spark, its flame dampened by the fear introduced with Tohin's news of the siege. Increasingly she found herself thinking of him with regret, fondness even, imagining what she would do if he were here. And then she stabbed those thoughts with her sharpest dagger, cut them right out of her mind. He could do without her. She could do as well without him. He would be fine. Without her. She stood over Nikolai, looking down at him.
Do you want to kiss me? She asked.
Nikolai made a strange choking noise.
What? Do you want to kiss me?
She did not feel things when she looked at Nikolai, but then she had not felt so much for Mehmed before they kissed. Maybe the secret to successfully bleeding him from her veins was replacing him. She generally found Nikolai more than tolerable, and he was good at taking orders.
Please, take this in the kindest way possible, he said, standing and walking backward to put more space between them, eyeing the knife she was toying with. But I would sooner try to romance my horse. And I suspect my horse would enjoy it more than you.
Larda lifted her nose to the air.
Your horse deserves better.
We can both agree on that.
Now, relatively certain he was not about to be stabbed, Nikolai sat on the wall next to her. The fact that she was not upset over his rejection indicated that kissing him would have done nothing to alleviate her problems.
I think of you like a sister, he said. Like a brilliant, violent, occasionally terrifying sister that I would follow to the ends of the earth, in part because I respected her so much, and in part because I feared what she would do to me if I refused.
She nodded. I would do awful things, Nikolai laughed.
The most awful.
And then I would steal your horse, lover, to spite you.
Your cruelty knows no bounds.
Larda stood, stretching, wishing she had somewhere to go. She could no longer retreat to the forest like she used to. A phantom voice followed her there now, whispering whore in her ear, the smell of dirt conjuring memories she preferred to leave buried.
I'm going to patrol the grounds, she said.
Nikolai nodded, then his jovial face turned serious.
I mean it, you know. I will follow you to the ends of the earth.
An unusual warmth spread through her chest. She looked away, trying to twist a smile off her lips.
Of course you will.
She made her way to the massive front gate of the fortress, feeling more buoyant than she had in weeks. Whatever else happened, she had her men. She had her command, and that was something, at least. A messenger, wearing the dust of leagues on his cloak, rode a weary horse up to the gate. He pulled a bag off his shoulder and held it out.
Letters from Albania!
I will take them. Larda grabbed the bag and called a servant. They sorted through the letters. Most were for servants who had family attending the soldiers, a few for her men from friends in the siege. It had been over a month since they had had any news, and it was all she could do not to open those letters. Then she came to a letter addressed to her. Her heart twisted, squeezing up too high and making it difficult to breathe. Had Mahmed finally written her? Leaving the servant without a word, she retreated to her room in the barracks. She set the letter on her desk, pacing around it, eyeing it with suspicion, as though it might disappear. What would it say? What did she want it to say? After all this time, what could he say to make her forgive him? Nothing. He could say nothing. She broke the seal, ripping the edge of the paper with her force, and opened it, scanning the contents quickly. It was not from Mahmed. The hand was unfamiliar, but the signature at the bottom was undeniably Radu's. She sat heavily, shock making it difficult to focus on the words. Radu was at the siege. How? Why? Was he with Mahmed? A strange sensation seeped through her, a writhing jealousy that Radu was there, where she had been forbidden, with Mahmed. Mahmed must have taken him, must have rescued him from Adirna. Gritting her teeth, Larda started at the beginning. The letter was brief, only a few lines long. He greeted her without preamble or explanation, stating merely that the siege was a disaster and would soon end. Then Larda stopped, dropping the letter to the floor. Then she picked it up, reading each word with care, as though she could change what it said. Sickness is rampant. This is a secret to remain between us. But Mahmed has fallen ill. I do not expect him to recover or survive the journey back. When he dies, you will be at the mercy of Murad, who still wishes you dead. Without Mahmed's protection, I fear for you. Whatever else has transpired between us, I could not live with myself without warning you. Gather what you can and flee, while no one is there to take note. When he dies, not if. When? Larda looked at the date on the letter. It had been written more than a month before, which meant that Mahmed might already be dead, might have been dead all this time. All the poison she had nurtured, the bitterness, the anger. her last words to him, her thought that if he did not come back,